Just like 2020 was a year of outcomes and surprises that many of us didn't foresee, I believe 2021 will offer some surprises as well, but this time on the upside. There's a perfect storm of economic outcomes, and that's what I'm going to be chatting with Pete Wargent about in today's show as we have a look at the big economic picture, the macroeconomic picture that's going to affect our property markets and our economy and our lives in general in the coming year. Now, it's really only been a year or so since the coronavirus started to affect Australia. And look where we are now compared to the middle of last year, even compared to the end of last year. It's hard to believe what we've achieved. We've had a spectacular success containing the coronavirus. The Morrison government built that bridge that Scott Morrison promised to get us across to the other side. The federal government and the state government's spending killed the recession. And remember, it was the deepest recession since the Great Depression. We've now got record low interest rates and a sooner than expected arrival of vaccines, even though that's taking a little bit longer to roll out than was initially proposed. Of course, all the above's pumped up our economy beyond everyone's expectations. It's helped our property market surge, our stock markets rebound, and it's bringing both business and consumer confidence. To be blunt, we've got an embarrassment of riches. And with our economy surging ahead, I hope that my chat today with Pete's going to give you some clarity about what the future holds so you can make better investment decisions and better business decisions. So welcome to today's show.
Welcome to the Michael Yardney Podcast, where twice each week you will learn a number of new ideas regarding success, property investment and money in around 30 minutes. Our show is brought to you by Metropol, who specialise in helping you grow, protect and pass on your wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. Now here's your host, Michael Yardney, Australia's authority in wealth creation through property, who has been voted one of Australia's top 50 most influential thought leaders.
Our property markets don't operate in isolation. So I believe it's good to regularly have a look at the big picture, the macroeconomic factors affecting not just Australia's economy, but the world economy. And who better to discuss that with than Pete Wargent, a lifelong student of and commentator of our economies. Hello, Pete.
Hi, Michael.
Well, I guess the surprise that has affected our economy, the way our lives are back in Australia, and the real estate market is Australia's economic recovery. It's really surprised everybody on the upside. Now, I know last year we had a technical recession. There are two consecutive quarters of negative GDP growth, but really the March quarter was really only a minor fall. So I guess there was one major quarter, a big one, the June quarter, where there was a significant drop. But boy, has the economy rebounded since.
Yeah, so it wasn't a recession like a traditional recession. It wasn't driven by a financial crisis, or it wasn't caused by rising interest rates or tighter credit or anything like that. It was literally a health crisis. But as it transpired, Australia put in place one of the biggest stimulus packages in the world, and the health crisis effectively went away. So combine those two things, and we had all of the alphabet soup of, is it going to be a W-shaped recovery or K-shaped? Well, it's pretty clear that it's a V-shape, but probably V-shaped and then some, because the economy will be back at record highs in the first quarter of 21, which is amazing when you think where we were just 6 months ago.
Well, that's right, but I think it's more than just a one-off. Our economy is likely to keep performing well moving forward, Pete. I mean, to date, it's unfolded quicker than we expected, but let's be blunt, it's also uneven. There are still some segments that are suffering, and there's a huge degree of spare capacity in our economy still, Pete.
Yeah, so the Reserve Bank actually thought that unemployment would rise to 10%. I mean, as it transpired, we got to just above 7%, but that's already falling very sharply. Job advertisements are up actually 25% from a year ago. So the way things are going, especially with the borders closed, so we don't have that big supply of new labour, it's well within the realms of possibility that we see the unemployment rate falling into the fives pretty quickly. But interestingly, the Reserve Bank has changed its stance quite clearly this week, and they're now going to look at trying to get the unemployment rate down to maybe 4%, perhaps even lower. And they've very resolutely said the cash rate will stay where it is until we've got full employment and we've got inflation back sustainably in the 2-3% band. So not just a one-off spike, they want to see full employment. So that's a big shift.
Sure. Well, I think that brings up a couple of points. There's been a lot of chatter in the media. There's been the usual suspects out there saying that our booming housing market's going to force the RBA to intervene, to raise interest rates, not keep them low, like Reserve Bank Governor Lowe said. But you're right. He came out and emphatically said the property markets are not going to be the reason for them to raise interest rates. There's other ways of dealing with that. But the other thing, and you glanced on it, was that they're now looking for lower unemployment rates rather than the 4.5 or so they came with the 4. And they're really wanting inflation to remain in a range of 2-3% for a while. And he believes to do this, you actually need higher wages growth. And you're not going to get wages growth until you actually end up having lower unemployment so that you don't have that extra capacity. What do you think? I mean, they haven't managed since the GFC to achieve either of those.
No, I think that this is a change of heart or a change of direction. Governor Lowe is well known in economic circles for having written a paper with Borio many years ago about leaning against asset prices to stop asset price bubbles. And that was generally where the Reserve Bank was in recent years. They were very reluctant to cut interest rates to boost inflation. They just wanted to see a very gradual fall in the unemployment rate. But we just never really got things moving again after the mining boom. I think now, after 5 years of having missed the inflation target and forecast for another few years, they've realized that, you know, if they're going to actually fulfill their mandate, they're going to have to try and push for a lot lower unemployment than we've seen. In terms of what that means for property, well, that's bullish. It means the cash rate's going to be at 0.1% for, well, at least until 2024. And that really leaves people with a position of, well, cash in the bank's not much use. So property is going to be a big beneficiary of that.
Sure. Just a bit more on interest rates. There's the other aspect of it, which is the bond yield. And some of the listeners may not fully understand that. So maybe you can explain a little bit about that, because rising bond yields have made some people think, well, this is actually going to now affect the short-term overnight cash rate or the variable cash rate, but maybe our fixed rate loans that we're taking out.
Yeah, so I guess the news in recent weeks, that Australia's 10-year government bond yield started to rise a bit. Now, that's rising from record lows, by the way, so it's not exactly a big thing. But Australia's structure is different. So we're not the same as the US, where people will take out a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage at 3%. In Australia, well, you can't, for one thing. We take either, you know, 1 or 2 year fixed rates. 5 years is the most you would normally see. And the most important bearing on mortgage rates is simply the cash rate and the 3 year floating rates. Now, there's a big change in the past, well, essentially as a result of COVID, and that's that the Reserve Bank has put in place a term funding facility. So without getting too technical, banks can tap into that facility at 0.1%, and therefore with the 3 year government bond yield also wired to the same level, mortgage rates are just going to keep on falling, in my view, because banks are competing for business. So the 10 year bond yield may well rise as the outlook improves, but that's not going to lead to higher mortgage rates, at least not anytime soon.
Right. So, as you said, that's going to be one of the factors underpinning the property market. I think another factor that's going to underpin the property markets, but actually our economy in general, because the property markets are reflecting a couple of things, including consumer confidence and people's security with their jobs. But it's the huge war chest of savings that Australians had. A lot of Australians stashed their cash last year. They were concerned about what would happen with COVID. Others couldn't spend their money overseas, as we've spoken about before. So there's been a significant war chest of savings that now people are starting to spend. So it reached quite high levels initially, but it's now being spent on consumer items, cars. Well, I think we feel we deserve to be rewarded a bit, but it's also going into property, Pete.
Yeah, completely, because somewhat counterintuitively, household incomes actually rose last year. The government put in place a range of stimulus measures. Some people accessed their super early. There was discounts on GST for some businesses and JobKeeper, and all of those stimulus measures put extra cash into the economy. But of course, the big thing is that for Aussies, particularly over the past decade, we tend to like travel these days. We all want to go and see parts of Europe or America, and that's just been off limits for people. So we've got all this extra cash and nowhere to spend it. So those dollars are staying at home. And the big ticket items you can really spend on, well, essentially it's a car or a house. And I think maybe domestic tourism is now going to pick up, but certainly property is a major beneficiary of that.
Sure, I think the domestic tourism will pick up when people are more confident that the borders are going to remain open. And with the recent announcement of discounted airfares and encouragement of tourism, hopefully that's going to happen. But just to put some context to this, last year in 2020, overall Australians' national savings rate soared to hitting 22%. In other words, for every dollar that was earned, about 22 cents was saved, which suggested we saved $187 billion in 2020. Works out to the total savings of the previous 3.5 years. And it's not worth anything in the bank anymore, Pete. The savings rate keeps going down and down. So if people don't feel they've got to have this war chest, this buffer just in case, they're doing something with it.
Yeah, completely. And we're already seeing that in real estate portals. You can see their buyer inquiries are picking up, and people are thinking, well, property is going to be one place to spend. And certainly, no doubt you've seen with your buyer's agency, suddenly a surge of inquiries from very circumspect last year. But now people have realized that the doom and gloom forecasts that always tend to be around are just not going to come through this year. And suddenly things are really swinging in the other direction.
Very much so, much quicker than any other property cycle I've worked through, including the fact that it's all over Australia at the moment, other than the high-rise inner city areas, regional Australia, the upper end, the lower end with the first home buyers, all markets, even though the higher end property values are now starting to pull forward. And that's what normally happens. So the people who had more, saved more, whose income didn't drop last year, they're now upgrading. This seems to be a cycle of upgraders, Pete. I'm noticing that tenants are upgrading. We're noticing that in our property management department. If they don't like where they are, they're taking the opportunity because there's more vacancies. Some tenants who can afford to upgrade to become first home buyers, they've taken advantage of that, the opportunities, all the incentives, except I think that's brought some first home buyer purchasing forward, which means that over the next year or two, that'll drop a little bit. People who are in homes are upgrading. Baby boomers are upgrading their lifestyle sometimes to other locations, but they're actually moving into townhouses or family-friendly apartments. So everybody's into it at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. And I think a lot of the forecasters didn't, what they didn't really appreciate or understand is that interest rate cuts, when you get closer to zero, the housing market is going to be more sensitive to an interest rate cut. So you get close to zero and you get a bout of rate cuts, that's going to light a fire under property. There weren't many commentators who were brave enough to say it. I think Simon Pressley was one and a couple of others, but really most people didn't really appreciate the stimulatory effect that falling interest rates would have, and here we are. So in the space of a few months, we've gone from people talking about banks stress testing at serious declines to suddenly now saying, oh, the market's going to overheat. And I don't think there'll be any rush to cool the housing market because, as you said, we've still got spare capacity. Interest serviceability is at the easiest level in about 45 years. So I don't think there'll be any rush, but it is possible that in a year or two, regulators might look to start slowing things down in some way.
Well, firstly, at the moment, it's not speculative. It's home buyers upgrading and moving, as we said. So the percentage of investors is very low. It's nothing like it was in 2016 when every second transaction in Sydney was a property investor, and that was unsustainable. So when the investors do come into the market more and there is more speculation, that's possible that there will be other regulatory measures. And Reserve Bank Governor Lowe even hinted at that. He said, It's not going to be his job to do it with regard to rising interest rates, but there are other measures. What was he talking about? I guess it's those macroprudential controls that we were discussed in the past.
Yeah, I mean, it was good to hear Lowe say that, because the Reserve Bank, it's not their job to fine-tune interest rates to try and cool or speed up the housing market, much as people think otherwise. Well, if you think back to 2017, when APRA stepped in, there was an awful lot of interest-only lending at that time. And certainly for investors, most loans were interest-only, and actually some home buyers. That was a concern, but APRA stepped in and they slowed the pace of investor lending to 10% credit growth, and they really smashed interest-only lending. So to the extent that actually interest-only loans are now the lowest as a share of the loan stock that they've ever been. So this time around, I don't think you'd see anything from APRA on that side of things. I think if they were forced to move, which might be a year away, maybe longer, they could potentially lean on the banks to slow the pace of credit. My guess is the most likely maneuver would be to have loan-to-value restrictions for some borrowers. I think that's, you know, we've seen it in New Zealand. We've seen it used elsewhere previously. So I don't think we'd see anything on interest only this time, simply because most people now are choosing to pay down debt.
Well, many are doing that. Others are securing themselves by taking the fixed interest loans for a period, as you've said. And the banks are in a good position. They, a year or so ago, I think some of them deep inside, if you were to peek behind the curtains, could have been worried. They were worried, if you read between the lines, about the defaulting debts. But that's actually something that hasn't happened. This fiscal cliff wasn't even a step down anymore.
No, I think it will be interesting to look back on some of the predictions that didn't come to pass over the past 12 months. I think one thing we've learned is the unpredictability of the world, because the pandemic wasn't on the radar. But Australia's shown itself once again to be flexible, floating currency, control of our own interest rates, and obviously having low government debt, again, has proven to be a real plus point, because when a crisis does come, they can pull a lot of levers to make sure that it's not too serious. So I think Australia will emerge from the past 12 months as probably alongside New Zealand as one of the two countries that with an enhanced reputation as a safe and desirable place to be.
Well, that's where people are going to want to come. But of course, we've closed our borders. But I was actually interested to read from Formula Prime Minister Kevin Rudd suggesting that it's vital for Australia to grow its population. Prior to the pandemic, we know Australia was one of the fastest growing countries in the developed world. And of course, that's temporarily being put on hold. But while unemployment's still high, I think people are going to wonder, should we really open our borders quickly? Should we restrict immigration? Should we restrict it until all Aussies have a job? But Kevin Rudd came out explaining how big Australia is going to be important to give us the population base, the tax base to increase. Well, in his case, it was really talking about the size of the military and some of the challenges posed by China's rise. But for me, I think it's also going to be important just to drive our economy.
Yeah, there's an old saying that you should always back the horse named vested interest, because it'll be the only one that's trying. I think we won't be talking about low population growth being an issue in Australia for too long. In Europe, it's already happening. I mean, just in the past 12 hours, France and Portugal are winding back their international travel restrictions. And those are countries that haven't eliminated COVID. I think once that FOMO starts kicking in and other countries are starting to benefit from migration, tourism, international students, I think Australia will suddenly see a shift. The biggest thing you find with market commentary is a recency bias. And when things are going in a certain direction, people think it will stay that way forever. But I think with vaccines being rolled out around the world now at a frantic pace, I think the tide will suddenly shift in the other direction. And then suddenly Australia will find a way to get the borders reopened.
Well, let's talk a bit about the global economy and the rest of the world then, as you started to explain it, because we're not working in isolation. And you're right, the rapid development of vaccines, their rollout, that's actually improved the global outlook. People were concerned about a worldwide recession, how long it would take. I mean, it was only a year ago that all this started, and 96 months ago people thought, gee, it's going to take years for the vaccine to come out. But the vaccines have lessened the downside risk, and now there's further stimulation, fiscal stimulus from in the United States. So what's your view on China also? Boy, it said it was going to have a very strong economic growth. What's your take on the global economic outlook and how Australia fits in?
Certainly, from a European perspective, the lockdowns have been so widespread and so prolonged, you think there would have to be some fallout from that. There's a lot of businesses, particularly hospitality, that have clung on and clung on, but they just can't continue with the lockdowns in place. So I think there will be some fallout, and the recovery might not be as quick as it might have been for Europe. But there's a phrase that goes gets used a bit about the Roaring Twenties, because after the Spanish flu, after World War One, there was the excitement of being able to get out and socialize and party again. And that led to a decade-long super boom, one of the biggest in history. That could be on the cards because the sheer amount of fiscal and monetary stimulus around the world, but maybe not everywhere. I think, as you've already touched on, it's probably quite uneven because this has disproportionately hit poorer households and certain sectors like aviation, tourism, hospitality, and so on.
I think we've got to acknowledge that while we're saying Australia is booming, the economy is doing well, and our property markets are doing well, there are still some people who are not doing well. They've either suffered health-wise or job-wise, and we recognise that, and for them, it's a terrible time ahead. Having said that, overall, we've done better. I don't think any of us would have really imagined 12 months ago that we would have gone through this amazing year, the ups and the downs and sideways for some. But I look forward to catching up with you once a month and having these regular, I guess, big picture chats. It's good to actually see where it fits in. And I think on balance, there's lots of green shoots and more good news than there is bad news in the markets at the moment, Pete.
Yeah, and almost by the day, every piece of news that comes out in Australia, whether it's job advertisements or housing prices or, well, pretty much every indicator that comes out, that they just keep on getting better. So I think it's in our hands now. We've got the right policies in place and the right settings for a very substantial recovery. So as long as we don't blow it, then I think it could be a good few years ahead.
Now, if people want to get more information from you, I know you have a daily blog which does a lot of charts, and you've got a podcast which is not about property but about the market. So maybe you could explain to us a bit about if people want to get more information from you, how they can.
Yeah, sure. So I do write a daily blog, far too many words in my head. So Pete Wargent's Blogspot is the easiest place to find me, and there's a link on there actually to our podcast. It's called Low Rates, High Returns with Steve Moriarty. So as you said, that's more of a stock market and a stocks investing podcast for something a bit different. And yeah, there's content on my blog every day.
Well, of course, I'll leave a link in the show notes and look forward to catching up with you again real soon. Thanks, Pete.
Always a pleasure. Cheers, Michael.
Before I share my regular mindset message with you, I'd like to give you an opportunity to take advantage of the current property markets by spending some time with me. And in fact, Pete Wharton's going to be there, but I think this year it may be virtually because he's stuck in the United Kingdom. But I'm wanting you to spend some time with me and allowing me and my team to be your personal mentors, spending 5 powerful days on the Gold Coast at Wealth Retreat 2021. Now, this year we're holding it on June the 12th to the 16th, and it's a public holiday for many people, so you're not going to miss much time work. But we've been holding it in the same resort since 2006. Sure, we missed out last year, but we booked the room, it's on this year, and hey, there's some cheap airfares around, so you may be even able to take some advantage of that. But you're going to spend 5 intensive days with Dr. Andrew Wilson, Ken Race, Simon Kirstenmacher. As I said, Pete will be appearing virtually, Tom Corley, business, property, tax, and share market experts. But we're going to make it in a small group environment, so we're going to help you plan the next 5 years of your life. You see, Wealth Retreat isn't really a property seminar. It's about you. It's my exclusive retreat designed for anybody who wants to accomplish bigger things in their life. It's for people who feel they've plateaued, it's for people who had some stumbling blocks in 2020. I want to make some big shifts for you. I want you to take advantage of the property market, the economic opportunities, the business opportunities that are going to arise moving forward. Now, if this sounds like you, whether it's in your property investment business that you want to grow or your regular business or entrepreneurial endeavors, I'd like to help make your dreams come true, because you're going to get my personal insights, my personal feedback on your plans, and you're going to receive elite mentorship that's going to make your life truly outstanding. Now, I know that sounds melodramatic, but boy, have I seen the results year after year after year. So there's no excuses this year. You've got to do it. This is the beginning of a new property cycle, a new business cycle, a new economic cycle. So if you want to join us and you get mentorship, masterminding, networking, and some fun, and spend 5 days together on the Gold Coast, go to wealthretreat.com.au. By the way, you can't book into the retreat. Anyone who wants to come will have to have a one-on-one chat with me, so I make sure it's right for you, and let's be blunt, for you to be right for the Wealth Retreat community. Now, there's going to be a link in the show notes, but go to wealthretreat.com.au and spend 5 days with us on the Gold Coast, and I look forward to being part of your wealth creation journey, helping you make the next 5 years of your life the best 5 years of your life.
Now here's Michael's mindset message. Remember, a change in your thinking will lead to a change in your life.
In my mindset message today, I'd like to point out that negative thinking is bad for your health. According to various studies and research findings, humans are their own worst enemy when it comes to how we think. The publication Psychology Today reported that 70% of our thoughts are negative. Really? Well, I guess some people are like that. In 2005, that was a while ago, the National Science Foundation did some research on how humans think. They found that humans had about 12,000 to 60,000 thoughts per day. And of those thoughts, they came up with the fact that 80% were negative. Even worse, they found that 95% of the thoughts we have today were exactly the same thoughts as we had yesterday. And if you think about that, that's true. Oftentimes the thoughts that we think are negative and they cause us to worry, and this leads to stress, which leads to a rise in the hormone cortisol. Excessive and continued production of this impairs our immune system and apparently opens the door for disease and infections. Now, have you had negative thoughts? What have you been thinking about the economy, the environment, the political issues? There's so much in the news that's always negative, pointing to the negative side of things. Every day I see people interacting on social media about things that are outside their control. Some of those reactions get heated, and it's clear that it's causing them some stress. But the media knows this. It knows we react more to negative news than positive news, so they force feed us negative news just to get the clicks. There's virtually nothing you can do about most of the negative things that you read about or you think about. When you read or think about negative things that you can't control, it leads to long-term stress because you can't change the outcome of those negative things. Those thoughts will be repeated inside your brain over and over again. And as I said, this for many people causes long-term stress. You should only be thinking about things you can control in your life. Focus only on thoughts about things in your life that you've got control over. You've heard me say it before. I want you to be the pilot of your life, in control, rather than the passenger where you feel you're being dragged along. Why? Because you can take action on certain things. You can fix what needs to be fixed, and then you just move on, allowing the other thoughts to go away. So my suggestion to you in this mindset message is stop thinking about things you can't control. It's a waste of your time, and it's bad for your health. I hope you got some benefit from my chat with Pete about the big picture, and it's going to give you some more clarity about what's ahead. And if you got some benefit from this, I'd love you to tell others about it who you think would also benefit, so they can take advantage of our markets as they move forward. That's a main aim of this podcast, to make more Australians, more people around the world, financially fluent. And if you enjoy what you're listening to, why not tell the world by leaving a review? And if I read out your review, I'd be happy to say thank you by gifting you one of my books, as I'm going to, for Dzisif, which is an interesting name, but that's okay. He left a 5-star review on Apple Podcast. And if you email me, michael@metropole.com.au, and give me your details, I'd love to gift you one of my books. So he's written here, or he or she, I thank you, said, new listener. I've been a listener for a couple of months now, and I've been working my way through all the previous episodes. Well done. Hey, by the way, there's a shortcut to it too. You can actually listen at 1.5 times speed. That's how I listen to podcasts. Anyway, he went on to say, or she went on to say, as a future first-home buyer and dreams of owning multiple properties, I love the knowledge I'm gaining from these seasons. Thank you for educating a future homeowner. Well, it is my pleasure doing that, and I look forward to being an ongoing part of your journey. And I look forward to being back with you again twice a week. In between these shows, you can catch me on social media. Just look for Michael Yardney. Or why not go to my private Facebook group where every day I put exclusive content that you won't find elsewhere. Just look on Facebook for the Property Update Group. I'll catch up with you again real soon. In the meantime, have a great week. Make it a great week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Michael Yardney Podcast, which was brought to you by Metropole, who help their clients grow, protect, and pass on their wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. If you like what you heard and don't already subscribe, you'll find us on iTunes or on your favorite Android app as the Michael Yardney Podcast. Watch out for our next show, which comes to you twice a week, and you'll learn some new ideas about property investment, success, and money in around 30 minutes. To get more of Michael's thoughts, go across to www.propertyupdate.com.au and sign up for his daily morning briefing, and you'll hear from not only Michael, but a group of leading property success and money experts. And just a reminder that the information you heard in this show today is general educational advice and not specific investment advice, as we don't know your personal circumstances. If you're looking for specific advice, why not ask the team at Metropole to help you?